even if it was a depressing brief, I'd just write something funny. Even if it was like sell carpets, carpet cleaner, like I'd write something funny. If it was like sell Tilda Rice, I'd write something mildly entertaining. Always completely off brief, like I was hated.
Hello and welcome to the Now Then podcast. In this episode, we speak to writer-director Rosie Mae Bird-Smith about comedy, creativity, and carving out your own path. From agency life to filmmaking, Rosie talks about finding her voice and the story behind her new short, Egg Timer. Hope you enjoy.
Now then.
Hello, Rosie.
Oh, is that why it's called Now Then?
Get out.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
What do you reckon? Now and then?
Yeah, I don't know what I was going for, but now I understand.
You're not listening. Like, you're not an avid listener, are you?
Sorry.
She's been dragged in by a producer.
Sorry, she deserves to be on this one right now.
I know, God, yeah.
Poor, in fact, we did see you on a different podcast, what we call Magic Music.
Massive. Rude. Yeah, we just spent like an hour talking about my awful music taste, Pitbull and Shania.
Yeah, I saw it and I was like, hang about, we've got Rosie coming on ours with the absolute Judas over here.
She's doing the round.
How you getting on? You're right.
I'm all right, yeah. I'm not too bad. I'm alive.
To be fair, we've been meaning to get you on for ages because we always chat online, don't we, and we stuff. And we always see your work. Your work's always doing really well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and it's different as well. So thanks for coming down.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we want to take charge with talking about your new short film, Egg Timer.
Yes,
it's funny, I had this director text me a couple of days ago, actually. I won't say his name, but he's like, oh, I'm going to make this, he's going to crack on and make this short film, and he's been talking about it for a while. And I was like, all right, sick. He's like, yeah, because I'm having a baby in October. And I was like, oh, well, you best get one. Yeah. You best get moving there.
Oh, God. Fucking hell.
Should be more like, yeah, let's make some money first,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to waste all my money on this short film and then have a kid.
I'm going to do my dream and then have my dream ruined.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes something like that to make you go, right, okay, let's fucking go, though, doesn't
it? That's true, actually.
Yeah.
I feel like before people have kids, they get well productive. Maybe that's what I need to do.
What was it for you? What kicked you in the ass to make your short film?
It's just stress, I think.
Yeah.
I fancy a bit more stress.
Pressure, stress. People being like, what else have you got? I don't know. Calm down. Like, let me just do one first and then come back to me.
I think sometimes people treat shorts as if they're about to murder someone.
And I know.
They take all the years to plan it and then never quite dare to do it. But you know when you're like, oh, it's just a film.
Yeah, that's actually so true.
Yeah,
I think just like shoot it and then just like don't have high hopes and like move on to the next one.
Yeah, yeah, because you do, as soon as you shot, you're like, right, what are we doing next, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You kind
of.
How long was the process of Egg Timer?
Oh, ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
could you give us a little like
3.5 years?
No way.
Yeah, yeah.
Could
that's
you
what
give
I
us
mean.
Little,
not worth it.
Premise about it, like, give us a little context about what it's about.
Yeah, yeah. So it's about, I wrote it when I was like 27. And it's about a woman called Megan, and she's turning 30, and it's literally just like set at her birthday party. And there's a lot of pressure from like all her family and all her friends, and she's just actually just having a really shit time. And then her own ovarian eggs like start piping up as well, and they're just all played by comedians in like Doctor Who headsets, headgear, which is, you know, on reflection, quite weird. But it worked quite well. So you basically just like flip between ovary and party, and it just gets worse and worse as like the day goes on. Because, yeah, I think there's obviously external pressure, but then there's also internal pressure. And external pressure's obviously been covered with like Bridget Jones, but internal pressure's never really been, well, I don't know. Maybe it has, but not what I've seen. Hasn't been touched on.
It's funny, you do watch Bridget Jones and she's like, I'm 30 and I'm single. And
yeah, exactly.
You know, you're like, well, you're a baby.
Calm down, mate.
Now yeah, you're living in a wicked flat in West London. That's what I thought of. I rewatched Bridget Jones.
She's actually loaded. Yeah. She's sweet.
Yeah.
And skinny. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And I like the bit where it switches to the ovaries in your short film. I think it's fucking really funny.
Oh, thank
like
you.
That bit cracked me up the most, I think. Just great casting with those like
casting,
you know,
was good. Very
so
good.
Funny.
Shouts to Emma Garrett.
So you work a lot within like comedy, and I always think that's a really tricky ground to kind of tread, because comedy can really work and it can't, and especially within the commercial industry. I think comedy is the best way to sell your product. For me, I'm always like, if
I'm
you
the hardest sometimes.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's such like, I don't know, a fine line.
It is a fine line. You can't go too hard.
Well, you've got this like window of when adverts pop up on your interval and they're all forcing an emotion. But you know what? We all want a little chuckle.
Yeah.
Whilst we're putting the kettle on. And so what drew you into the comedy scene?
I don't know. I wasn't like a hilarious child. I've never been like a hugely, like audibly funny. But I really like, I've always just really loved it. And when I was obviously worked at Havas, I was a writer, and I always used to just write funny, even if the brief wasn't funny. Also, I talked about this on the competitor podcast, so maybe I should say something else. But,
they'll listen to this.
Yeah, they'll listen to this one, don't you worry.
You just said competitor podcast.
Yeah.
No one competes with Now Then.
Now Then.
I'm joking. It was a great podcast. I'll listen to it.
Thanks. I'll try and say something fresh.
Also, just to tap on that as well, so you were a creative at Havas, right?
Yes. Yeah.
But were you before that, were you creative as well?
I was always.
Or you started straight in agency?
Straight in.
Right.
From uni. And then I'd get a brief and I would just, it would be like, even if it was a depressing brief, I'd just write something funny. Even if it was like sell carpet cleaner, like I'd write something funny. If it was like sell Tilda Rice, I'd write something mildly entertaining. Always completely off brief, like I was hated. and then I got to a sticking point where I was like, I can't sell these in because people don't want them.
Yeah.
And then I got a bit, not bored, but I was like, oh, I just don't know what else to do. And I don't know why, it just didn't really sink in. And then I wrote Herd Immunity because I was like, oh, this is funny, mildly entertaining. And then I was like, I'd like to make that. Who's going to make it for me? Oh, I'll just make it myself.
So that was while you were at Havas. Did they help you with that? To do that short film? And was that around, 2020, was it?
Yeah,
was it
2022.
Right, okay. Straight after all lockdown things and jazz.
When people were like ready to joke about it.
Yeah.
Appropriate time.
People got over the deaths.
Past the deaths.
Yeah. Right.
Past the imprisonment.
Yeah.
It's nice to have that support though as well. And it really did kind of boost you into
they were amazing.
The directing seat as well, didn't it?
They were really good. We won some funding and then so they got behind it, but they got everybody behind it. We got like Zav, our CEO, behind it, and they were so supportive and they gave me like all the time to do it. And they were so good. And then they were like, you should sign. And they just gave me the time to do that, and it was a brilliant place to work.
But did they then go like take you seriously as a director rather than just a writer?
Yeah, they did actually. And go, they were like, can you please do these? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that?
Because then you did an ASDA thing with them.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was around the same time. So I wrote that a similar time to Herd Immunity, and I was trying to get ASDA to buy it for like, I don't know, a year. I was like, please just buy this.
What do you mean buy it?
As in like, give me the money to make it. Because they had this partnership with, ASDA have this partnership with Copperfield and Breast Cancer Now, but they'd never made a film about it, but they always like raise money every year for the breast cancer charities. But they'd just never, they do campaign every year, but they'd never done like a film.
Oh, wow. So that was your idea and ASDA gave you money to make it?
Yeah. So I made this real self-checkout idea. It started with a radio ad. I wrote a radio ad and it was like from the voice of a self-checkout.
How crazy is that? Because I watched that ASDA advert and I just thought, fair play, ASDA. And
oh, no, I'm so glad they did it.
Well, it's making light of something serious, which makes you pay attention a bit more.
Yes, yeah. You know,
rather than going...
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there should be more adverts like that, I think.
Yeah. I think
I thought they were really powerful.
I loved that one. That was really fun. But they didn't... They were doing ASDA Christmas, which they spent so much time on. So, like, nobody was... nobody, like, had any eyes on this because it was... I was like, I'll just shoot it for you for free, basically. So we did it with Havas Studios and we had £0. I think we had like 10 grand or something. And we shot it. And it went well.
Yeah.
We raised £6 million.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And you got, did you get any cheeky cuts? No.
And can you give me some more things to do?
Wow.
No.
That's great.
Yeah, but I think it was beneficial.
Wow. So how have you found it kind of like moving into the production side of things then?
Yeah, really good. I think it was where I was supposed to be. I think it was, I also said this on the other podcast, but
I just think we should stop now. Let's wrap it up right now.
I think I was like a really awful creative, not awful, a good writer, but a very annoying creative to be working with as a director, because I was a director, really. I was I had very specific ideas about like lamps that I wanted and lighting, and I'd do a treatment, and then I'd like send the treatment, or what I didn't realize was a treatment,
to the director,
and then I'd send it off, and it'd be like 90 pages, and it would be like, you know, I want this lighting, I want these lamps, I want this, like, oh, so much detail, and then I'd get it back, and I'd be like, this is rubbish, they've just removed lamps.
Well, you know what? That's so interesting, because I think a lot of creatives also do have that like director gene. Now they dip the toe in, and so
yeah, I think.
But you're right. It's really, I mean, hopefully you'll come across someone like yourself who's a writer in the agency and realize
how so annoying,
tough it is. Yeah, yeah. But that's the thing as well. It's kind of like, it's making sure everyone kind of understands the place within it. And when everyone starts treading everyone's toes, that's when things become really fucking difficult, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Because it must be weird.
I made things very difficult.
Well, it must be weird now getting the briefs rather than writing them yourself. Because you're getting them, and you know what it's like as a creative to even just sell something in, you know, how tough it is, and how many rounds of feedback you go, and then it gets to a director stage, and obviously they want to change things, but sometimes it's like, well, yeah, now we've sold this bit in, we can't tell that. So what is it like now on the other side, where obviously you're a writer and you want to change things? Like, how much flexibility do you really get with that?
I think you can tell, though, can't you? I think, you know, like, you'll know when you get on calls, and I can tell if they've been through a year of stress or if they've just written it and the client's like, yeah, easy breezy. Like, you can so tell. I think, and if you, like, there's been jobs that I've done where I'll get on the call and it'll be like so evident that I'll always be like, so, you know, is there any like room for movement in the dialogue? Because aka, can we rewrite the dialogue? And then they'll be like, they'll either be like, oh no, we can't change that, and, or like literally can't change a word, or they'll be like, yeah, you can rewrite whatever you want. And it doesn't matter either way, because if you like a script, you like a script. But you can so tell when people have already been through the ringer. Because that is just what being creative is. It's like a year and a half of one script in the making, and then you get it to a director and you're like, no, tried that. Like, yeah, obviously they probably have tried it already. If they're a good creative, they will have already tried it.
Yeah.
It's just good that you've got that kind of first hand on both sides, though, isn't it? It's good that now you're on this side.
The dark side.
But you also understand that side, because that's one thing, being like, you don't really know what goes on behind closed doors. And especially within the agency side, if you're on production side, it can be a real kind of like dog eat dog game trying to get that script. And So it's nice that you're finally tasting that.
Yeah, it's funny. I think when you're a creative, you're like, oh, this is, oh, like, I don't know. I think you always think the grass is greener, don't you? So you're like, oh, that looks sweet.
Yeah, they've just written it and passed it on to us, and now we've got to take care of it.
Yeah. But when you're a director, you don't realize. I think if you haven't been a creative, it's easy to take for granted just how much graft is involved, and rounds and rounds of scripts. Like, I did a Durex job and I wrote like, I think it was like 62 scripts or something over the course of like a year and 3 months. Yeah.
On the agency side.
Yeah. And then you finally get it to the director and they're like, sweet, let's go. And it's like, that's a very nice position to be in, because you just skip out all of the politics.
And did you have choice in, choice in the directors as well? Did you have like,
yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, it is actually. And it's funny now being this side, because now I get like pitched against them. And I'm like, ah, God.
You text them.
Yeah, like, God's sake. but yeah, I think, you always had choice. But it was a weird format though, because you get like, like Wreck-It, you know, like RB, Do you know, like the like massive cleaning brand?
All right.
And that was like one of Havas's massive clients, and they had like a roster of directors that they had to use. It was very strange. Right. It was a very strange setup.
These people do cleaning.
Yeah, these people do cleaning.
Yeah, I hate that. Though.
I know.
I hate that.
And I was like, well, why can't I give this like vanished carpet cleaning job to Nick Ball?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I remember like having that fight, and then I was like, I'm going to lose this.
Yeah, and his stuff's funny as well.
Yeah, ridiculous.
To be fair, when I'm back up north and like, I don't know, TV's always on it, background, whatever, and yeah, you see some adverts, I guess like the vanished ones, or maybe there's like a, you know, mopping up the floor one with a dog walking across it, and I'm just like, who?
Flash.
Who does them?
Speed more!
Who does them?
Cleans up the impossible.
I never see it like that.
I do think that.
Who the fuck does
and
these?
And I'm like, who does these?
Because these look great.
Yeah.
But have you got a mop on your real Craig?
No. And then there will be one day a really good mop script, and then they'll be like, well, he hasn't done another mop, so no.
Yeah.
Tell you what, it's absolutely funny, actually. This producer, I won't mention any names, but he's one of the head of productions, and he was like, do you have any kids on your script? And I was like, I just pretended a second unit or something with some kids.
What, kids on your roof?
You know when you're like...
Yeah, but you did, didn't
I have
you?
I have worked with kids, but you know when
he
you're
hates
like...
hates kids.
No, oh, I love kids.
No,
I love
no,
doing...
No, I
you,
love
you told me how much you hate them.
No, I love
you've
kids.
You told me how much you hate
Listen,
them.
Listen, anyone with a kid's script
actually,
on it,
weirdly,
I fucking love
like,
kids.
I like covered off kids, dogs, pigeons, worms, like in like the first two jobs I did. I did all of it in like two jobs.
Come at me.
Yeah, bring it.
Get a car in there.
Yeah.
No, I like kids.
Do you know what I hate about working with kids at your auditions? Oh my God. It's just the most uncomfortable
thing.
I
love that.
No, I hate.
And then
you know,
to
they
pass
all come
it.
In and then their mums are like, go on, Humphrey. And it's just like, oh no. Half of them are like, are in tears, and you're like, they don't want to be here. Like,
no.
Take them home.
Yeah.
You just cast the kids
I'm gonna
with
get
the kids.
To cut
this
bit out.
Yeah.
No. I just spent a week in a high school, literally surrounded by kids.
I thought they banned you from that high school.
It were at your old high school, was it?
Exactly, yeah.
What were you doing?
I can't wait for
filming?
You to see this film, mate. I think you'll love it, you. They were this educational piece, and I just wanted to make sure I did a really good job at it, so I spent extra time on it. But it were in your old high school, wasn't it, Ozzy?
It was,
nice.
Ozzy was the hardest
Where?
In his high school.
Oh, and I was head boy.
I was head girl. Oh, hello. Hello.
Fucking
I felt
hell.
The connection, actually, Ozzy. I felt it.
I just love that.
My performers
was the hardest kid in high school, and when I think about my rough high school that I went to, and I think about the hardest kid, he don't look like Ozzy.
You can't be the hardest kid and her boy. That doesn't align.
Well, that's it.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
No,
soft,
I was
soft
the weirdest
school,
kid.
Soft school.
Yeah. No, so normally you're a bit of a weirdo. If you're
no
a
one
girl.
Could speak.
But wait, it depends. Was it like pupil elected?
Half and half.
Half. Yeah, same. Half
so
and half.
The teachers' vote counted
it
for
was a very stressful
one full
time.
Vote, and then the pupils counted for half a vote.
Okay.
So it was like they split it like that. So it depends on which teachers and which students like me. But we had to do a big speech. Did you have
to
do
Yeah, I did.
Big,
yeah.
Yeah.
God, it's making me stressed just thinking about
I know,
it, to
yeah.
be fair.
I had a campaign, people campaigning.
Yeah, so did I. And I had to make a slogan, and it was, don't chicken out, vote Birdsmith. Brilliant.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't have a slogan.
That was the start of my copywriting time. Looking
and then
back,
it began.
And then it began.
Oh, right.
She writes lines for Vanish. Yeah.
We found the origin story. I love it.
I actually never thought of it like that. That's
I find it crazy how like both your schools did that.
Did you not? Were you not a head boy?
No. There were no such thing as a head boy. They were the hardest boy, and that were about it.
You were in scabby school, though, mate.
Yeah, I was in scabby school.
We were in the same area.
But yeah, but not the same school.
I wanted to go to the same school.
He wanted to come. He cried when he didn't get in.
Oh, were you in like a posh school?
No, it's like catchment areas.
I'd say it were a posh school,
It was the poshest of the area.
It but feels like a private school.
But you go to the area and you go,
oh.
Yeah.
King's feels like a private school, I think. It's not, but it feels
Where
like
Where are we
it.
Talking? Where are you?
A place called Pontefract.
Okay.
In West Yorkshire.
Okay.
Ascendon, 10 miles from Leeds.
Pontefract.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
It's a nice school.
It's a nice school.
Nicer than yours.
It's not hard to be nicer than his school.
No. Mine were a new build. I don't know. I've got some great memories of school, but I do remember, you know, a lot of it were about being hard. Do you know what I mean? So what else did they ask you on Magic Music?
What else did they ask me? We talked about music, obviously.
Casting.
No, not really, to be fair. Did we talk about that? Maybe a little bit.
Because we're in the realm of it. And I think casting's a massive thing in your work.
Oh, thank you.
Huge. Well, it feels like it.
Yeah,
it feels like it. Because surely you can cast someone and it can shape even the dialogue.
Yes.
Because they're putting their things in or giving them the flexibility to, you know, be able to bring their own thing to it and they're not stuck to something.
Yes.
How important is that for you?
Huge. Like, main part. Because I do a lot of improv. It's like mainly improv, to be fair. And that's why you got to test the waters at the start and be like, is there room for manoeuvring the dialogue?
Improv with the cast?
Yeah, always.
Right. What do you mean, improv?
So do in audition, I'm going to give away my darkest secrets now, but in auditions I'll always do the line just to like appease everyone, calm everyone down. So we'll run the line and then we'll run like alt lines that I've written in my bank that I think like might flow better. So that then even in the auditions, the client's like, oh yeah, that does work. And then you're just calming everyone. And then I'll be like, now just do what you want, whatever you want, freestyle. And it's just always better if you've got the right person. And then I cast that person.
Maybe just as a test, we should do some improv work right now.
God, I hate improv so much. I did drama. I did like drama and my drama teacher, lovely, bless her, but we used to do improv every lesson because I think she didn't want to do anything. So we'd just get there and she'd be like, improv for an hour. So we'd do improv every Saturday for an hour. But I hate it so much. So I just used to, we always used to like improvise being in a lift and I just used to give birth every time. What else can you do?
That's the next short film.
Yeah.
Stuck in a lift. Giving birth.
But I like improv, not for myself.
I like a bit of improv. Might make a note of that one.
Yeah, right. Improvise.
Nah, I think it's a nice touch. I think it's a good way to just kind of understand that you're both on the same page as well. Do you know what I mean? I think that's the difficult thing half the time. Not even with actors. It's like even working with, I don't know, like you said, graders, VFX, whatever. It's making sure we're all aligned, isn't it?
Yeah.
As soon as one person's off,
you've
got to bring it back.
Do you think about that when you kind of surround yourself with people? Do you have these kind of like vibe calls where you're just like, are they on the same page as me? Do they have any crack? Are they too serious?
I quite like serious people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On set with you? What, to keep you in line?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And it's not just, I don't know. That's a hard one. I think I just like people that are really good at their job. Like really good. You don't have to be like really funny and have like really good crack. If you're good, then great. Like, yeah, I think also like I like a calm set, like very calm. So like, don't be bringing me stress or like too much chat. Like, let's just I don't love it when it's really chaotic.
Yeah, we always say that, don't we? Just like no chat, just crack on. Just...
Well, it's time and place, isn't there?
Time and place for chat. Yeah. Yeah,
you know.
So if in between every take, like of someone I've hired, it's like blah 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 blah, I'll be like, oh god,
because
like,
then you can't think.
I can't think. Also, I just need a breather, like. So yeah. I don't actually love that much chat, but I like just like someone who's very good.
I always find Aussie DPs are super chill.
Are they
Australian DPs? You mean?
Yeah.
Not just. I thought you meant your DPs.
Yeah, not Aussie DPs, like from Australia. Yeah, they're always.
I've
like,
never worked
super
with an Aussie
chill.
DP.
Yeah, we bounce off one quite a bit, don't we?
Yeah.
I jump with loads of different DPs though.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Yeah. Like, well, there's a loyalty thing that you think, but
when you start out, you're like, oh no, I'm betraying them.
Yeah, but I had mentioned it to you before when working with DPs, so I'm like, well, they're not like loyal, they jump about and work all the times and flexing. And for us, it just depends on the job and what feels right.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's definitely a feeling right thing, but I think also definitely is a feeling right thing, but I think I always find it. difficult to really sync up with someone. Do you know what I mean? And when I'm sunk up, I'm just like, sweet, nice one. We're moving, and I don't know. I never kind of. I've only got about 3 AUs, really.
I think that's the sweet spot, though. I think, and in all your HODs, what I'd like to have is like 4 or 5 in like every department where I'm like, yes. And then you can just rotate between them. I feel I'm nearly there.
But the edit must be quite, because I always see the edit process being just as important, if not, it's like the second part of the directing arm, because I love editing a lot. But that must be pretty important to you as well as the casting, going from the casting, but because it's timing.
Yeah, it's really important.
But it must be even tougher when you've got time restrictions, with commercials being 30, maybe 40, and then 60.
Yeah.
Because you're like, right.
Especially with comedy as well. Yeah. It's like, you've got to land the joke. And I think my producer really wants me to make animatics, but I hate animatics. So... like Jeff, for example, like Jeff Lowe makes animatics, and that's really great. And I think it's really effective in comedy to like work out exactly when things land. But I just don't. I just can't do it. Like, I like to just shoot what I've got in my head, as long as it fits in the day, which sometimes it doesn't. And then work it out. I prefer to have extra footage to play around with. Because if I just shoot what's on the on the boards. Or like, I'll always overboard, which everybody hates, obviously. And then I do lose stuff. And maybe with experience, you know that you didn't need that in the first place. But not always. And it's always just nice to have it, isn't it?
Do you find yourself doing a lot of takes? Or do you do one for them, one for you, and then let them kind of riff a little bit? Or
Again, that's an experience thing, isn't it? Like, one of the first few jobs I did like 71 takes or something.
For one shot,
yeah.
David Fincher over here. Is anyone going to tell us to stop?
Anyone going to tell her to stop? The first AD was literally like losing her nut.
What would you say on like the 70? Because I think it's a fine
it's
line.
Like eyebrows and stuff. Eyebrows are like so important for me, and he just didn't have his like eyebrows in the right place, and there wasn't enough like cheekiness, and it's just. And then there was also like a technical element. We were moving the camera, but then he was also moving his fingers, and it was just there was a lot. There was a lot going on.
Yeah.
So we just kept going.
Because that's the tricky thing, isn't it? I think when you get past 12, 13, suddenly it's like, you don't want to hit a wall with these guys, especially your talent. But like you said, if it's a real kind of like syncing up the camera and the fingers and then fucking eyebrows are a nightmare sometimes.
He didn't mind. He was fine.
That's cool. Yeah, because sometimes there's like a almost like a panic, isn't there, that kind of goes on. You're like,
I think it depends on who you've cast. But and then also, I wouldn't do that again, because over time your feedback just starts getting less and less clear, doesn't it? Like, the more takes you do, the more you're like, combine this with this with this with this. And obviously that's not going to work, because they're just going to not remember anything you've just said. Yeah. So, and then that's why also I just feel like when you just go, you do that for a while and then you go, forget everything, do what you want, best take. pretty much always, because they've kind of remembered all of it in the subconscious, but then they just let go of it all, free up a little bit, and then it's really good.
I agree. I think it must be, you know, as an actor as well, taking direction and taking straight from out of your mouth or whoever's mouth, and then to seconds later try and create an emotion out of the choice
of
words.
That's so hard.
That's difficult, isn't it?
Really,
do you know what I mean? So I feel like you've got to understand the material before you even go into it. It's like, you know, so... fair play to good, you know, when you work with good people, you just see it straight away, don't you?
Yeah, but that's why you can tell in the audition.
Yeah,
you can always tell,
and it makes you look great as well, doesn't it?
Does make me look really good.
Yeah,
Tommy.
Tommy.
Have you ever written a really risky gag that's got in, and then the clients wanted to take out?
Oh, I don't think so. We had some in Ginsters, we had the woman that we cast for that was, again, just absolutely hilarious.
She's great.
Like,
yeah,
maybe one of the funniest people I've ever met. And we just, that was just all improv. That was like me asking questions and like her answering the questions. And we practiced loads, but like I was like, we're not doing any like pre-rehearsed lines. And that was like, I didn't want to sign up to the job unless they were on board with the fact that like it was definitely not pre-rehearsed.
Wow.
And we had some really risky things in there that she came out with that was just, oh my God, it was so funny. Yeah, just like sexualizing like the shapes of her potatoes and like just so many things. Like, really good. Which they did actually, I can't remember. No, some of them stayed in. Like in the client's cut, they had one where she was like pointing to her sculpture and it was like shaped like a penis, like a potato sculpture. And she was like, this one, rudest potato, but I can't show you that. And it was all like pixelated out. And that one, I think that actually did make it in, but she said some hilarious things and like some really political things as well that we obviously... She was going off and we were like really laughing and then we could hear the clients in the other room like, okay, that's enough of that now. It was really good.
So talk to us about Egg Timer.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, back to the short
back to the point. Yeah.
How it came about, how you got the money.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff, right, Craig?
Right, Craig?
Yeah, that one.
That kind of positive stuff. Yeah, so we won a... Well, it basically came about from a place of stress because there was like a lot of people messaging me being like, well, a lot of commissioners being like, what have you got in your bank? And I was like, what's a bank? I was like, what are you talking about? And they were like, well, what other things have you written? And I was like, well, nothing. And I was like, this is it. Like, is that not enough? And then, so then I started to really panic and I was like, God, I need to do something else. Which is not a very good place to write from, really.
What do you mean, in terms of commissioners to make shorts?
Yeah, and also like longer form.
What, they'd say, what else have you got in the bank?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah. I don't know why. Like, it was just from herd immunity. Loads of people emailed me being like, what is like your long form? Like, what scripts have you got?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, all these things. And I was like, I'm
it's a lot of pressure,
bloody
man.
Anything. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, can you just calm down? Like,
yeah.
Just made this gag and that was it. And then I got really stressed. And I was like, oh my God, like, what have I got in my bank? I don't have a bank. I've got no money.
Because you feel the pressure in terms of like, fuck, I need to do it while things are hot.
Keep up the momentum.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, which is so much pressure.
Oh, it's horrible. It's horrible. Which I've stopped now. I'm like, I don't want to do that now. Yeah. We're not doing that. As and when.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But at that point, I was like, God, I need to write something else. So we wrote from a place of stress, which is just not conducive to good work. And then, I wrote that. Wrote that and then it won some cash and I was like, well shit, we've got to make it now.
So what was that, what competition was that?
Outstanding Screenplays, which has like a massive Instagram following. I think like The Rock follows it. I don't know how they're doing it.
Dwayne Johnson,
he's doing it very well for himself. Well, the guy that runs the account.
Yeah. Didn't I see you on an interview on that account?
I was see, look, I'm doing the rap.
Fucking hell.
Thanks for the money.
Get us a face about.
Yeah.
So we won that and then that meant we had to produce it.
Cool.
Yeah. Let me rephrase that. We got to produce it.
Yeah.
Which
well,
is
that's,
lovely.
That's great. You know, I think also there's something you said on the screenwriters thing that I really connected with, and I think it's important. You know, you were talking about awards and talking about submitting scripts and you were just like, yeah, you know, people just forget to do it or people just don't do it. And it's important to just, you know, you can finesse and maybe just, you know, talk about entering stuff or talk about submitting stuff, but it's important just to fucking do it.
Yeah.
And that's what I loved about that interview that you had. And I think that's something that I think not everyone, I don't know, has, I guess. Like, there are, especially in our industry, there's mad insecurities about being judged and about putting work out there that represents who you are. And
yeah, I feel like it's constant.
It takes the fun. Yeah, sorry, I was. Yeah, it takes the fun out of this industry, which it really is. It's so much fun, isn't it? And when I mean, to be fair, I nearly canned one of my recent ones, but I tell you, best time on set I've ever had. I didn't can it, you know. Still got something I love out of it, but like, fuck me.
You best do time forget, on set. Like, you do. And I think recently as well, like, I think the more you do, like, the fair, like, Herd Immunity was so much fun. Like, I've actually just never had that much fun. Like, I had, it was just hilarious, like, and I just loved it. And then the more that you do and the more that goes on, the more you get caught up in, like, oh, no, this has to be good. Like, it has to live up to the last thing I've done. And then you start to worry. And then you start to doubt yourself. And then you start to just stress about the shoot days rather than actually just liking them. And I feel like I've, like, lost, like, you'd almost lose it a little bit. Like, you lose that kind of, like, joy and excitement. Yeah, like when we shot Herd Immunity, I was like, oh my God, this is just pure joy. Like, I've never been so happy. Like, this is just joyous. and then as time goes on, you're like, you start to doubt yourself, I think. And then you're like, oh, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? You just start to question yourself.
Do you feel a massive difference from, say, making something like Herd Immunity and Egg Timer compared to now doing the commercials? Do you feel different internally, or do you treat them as the same thing?
I treat them as the same thing. But I think there's, like, a naivety when you start, which is really lovely, that then you kind of lose. Because you, like, when we did Herd Immunity, I was like, I wrote this script and I was like, there's going to be sheep on a bus and in a bath and in a bathroom and in a house. I didn't think, like, logistically that's not very possible because we don't have the money for blah, blah. Yeah. I just thought, like, I want to get sheep on a bus, like, make it happen. Yeah. And I literally didn't even question it. And as a result, we did it. It was like a boiling day and there was, like, vets and we got sheep on this bus. And I wasn't, at the time, I was like, well, of course, because that's what I wanted. But now I think you, as time goes on, you just realise, like, all the logistics. And I look back and I'm like, oh, I was so naive. But that's just amazing that all those things actually happened. But then you kind of, yeah, I don't know, you start to... You accumulate all of that stuff over time, and then as a result, you don't aim so high. Yeah. Maybe that's my experience.
Yeah, or having a relationship with a producer that doesn't tell you everything logistically. You know, so there's kind of one or two producers where you'll have one side where they'll just go tell you and everything logistic. Well, this, and this, that, rather than going yes or no. And I kind of hate hearing all the logistic stuff.
Don't tell me, because it'll just stress me out.
I don't know about the parking.
No, don't know about the parking.
Can't do this location because we can't, you know, because of the park. I'm
like, I don't know. I think that's important, mate. I'm into
it. It is important, but it's like, I'm sure, the thing is, I'm like, well, it's the wheels of ways. I don't want to hear about logistics of parking.
Well, I think that's different. I think you're talking about commercial, I think,
but it's when someone's trying to convince you that it's not right because of the logistics.
Right,
it's just dream shattering.
But you go, but it's better for the script.
Yeah.
We should do that.
Yeah, Yeah. But I think on shorts, weirdly, you kind of wear the producer-director hat anyway. So, like, you kind of, you're dancing between them both. And, let's be fair, you're only... you're kind of directing the second half of the job. Everything up until getting on location is pretty producer heavy, to be fair. It's all about logistics and finding locations and casting all that crap. So I don't know.
It's nice to know, as in the producer that I work with now is brilliant, and he just tells me what I need, and then I can tell when something's off, and I'm like, oh God, what's wrong? And then he's like, nothing. And I'm like, well, something's wrong, so you just might as well tell me. And then he'll tell me when I need to know.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best combination.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be privy to some stuff, but, like, don't know. You don't want every dream shattered, do you?
I just think it's great that you've come from a short film and been able to push your voice then through into commercials, like, solidly.
Yeah.
Which I think can be... it can get diluted sometimes, but then looking at your scope, it's like there's a constant that's really impressive.
Oh, thanks.
To have.
Yeah.
With casting language, visual language.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes you see a lot, you know, my work included, it's like kind of gets scattered and some things get lost, and it's really hard to then get back into, get in line.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, a lot of directors just want to work. So they just want to work.
Yeah.
So if something's not right, it's like, well, I'll just do it anyway.
I'll do it, yeah.
So have you found that difficult to keep that, or is it just like the scripts have just fallen right and gone, right, I can make this.
I think it has been pretty good, to be honest. Like, the scripts that I've got, I've been, like, very, like, clear on what I wanted from them. And I think you can make that really clear. Sometimes it doesn't work. Like, I've done a couple of jobs where I've been like, well, that just hasn't worked, and that's fine. But then that's not my... Tonally, that's nothing like where I would have wanted it to be, and then so as a result, that's not going on my reel. But generally, I think you can kind of tell on the calls if it's going to go in that way or not. And I think, like, I try to make it very clear from the start all of the points that are, like, all the parts of my work that I want to get into the film, and if they're not going to buy into some of them, like, then we really need to, like, have a conversation, because then I'm like, then it's not my work.
Would you ever be tempted to do anything, or ever thought about just doing something that's not just completely comedy?
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, I'd feel really like to.
You know, like we were chatting about, you kind of, directors get labelled very quickly.
Yeah.
Rosie's a comedy director.
Yeah.
You know, and it's quite, initially, but you're a director. Doesn't mean you categorizes that you surely can do other things. So I always like to ask, like, you know, if that's a possibility, or if you'd want to do that.
Yeah, I'd love to. I like things that are like a bit of both. I think the best comedy is also sad, and so yeah, I'd like to. I think as long as you keep like there's different parts to a director's tone, isn't there? It's not just whether it's funny or sad. It's like what it looks like, the type of people you cast, like the production design. And so you can keep all the other elements and it would still be like your work, I think. I don't know, that's how I see it.
Just thinking of some dark comedy.
Well,
yeah, dark.
One of my biggest references, I mean, I love Billy Elliot.
Yeah.
Because it's sad and funny.
Oh, I'm not going on Billy Elliot again, are we?
Well,
I do love Billy Elliot.
There's this scene.
Here's the boy, a chance.
There's this scene and he's sad and he gets beaten up. Boxing or something, he sits
this is down. How I'm imagining you at school.
Yeah, gets beaten up, sits down, and the girl who's like the other character of him, like, you know, I think she's just like drinking something, like she shuffles over to him and she can see he's sad and she just goes, "You can see me fanny if you
oh
like."
Yeah.
And he just says, "Nah, you're all
right.
you're all right
Oh, that is good. That is a good
and
scene.
I always just remember that scene. I'm like, that is, because he's so sad, he's throwing his gloves down, and then she says that, "Nah, you're all right."
Yeah.
And then Julie Walters comes over.
Yeah.
That's 10 out of 10.
It's...
Yeah.
For me, anyway.
Yeah, it's got a lot of heart, that film. I was just thinking I was thinking about Four Weddings and a Funeral, actually.
Mm.
You know, when the guy keels over, has it?
Well, he's bringing you up to then gut punch you.
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it? That's
have a big breath and I'll smack you in your stomach.
Yeah. Afterlife's very good at that. Ricky Gervais has got that down to a T.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've not watched that one.
That's good. You should watch
is it?
That.
Yeah.
What is your what's your biggest inspirations, really? Like, what is your
bloody hell.
comedy? What you go like? That's, you know, you just said Afterlife.
Films
that's inspired you to tonally, TV series.
That's tough. I've got an awful like
big question.
I've got an awful taste in music. Films,
what
plays.
Kind of films do you like?
Finding Nemo. 10 out of 10. Actually, do you know what? Like, let's not beat around the bush. Finding Nemo's hilarious.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah, like, absolutely hilarious.
No,
and
it is hilarious.
And I don't know why I'm trying to convince
you. I mean, it opens
you.
Up so sad.
God, it's so sad. Also, brilliant music. Yeah. So, I don't know. No shame there, really. Stardust, incredible film.
Don't think I've seen Stardust.
Oh my god, so good. It's I'm just listing children's films. Paddington 2.
Yeah, Paddington's
really good. Paddington's
incredible. Yeah. Like, Paddington 2 is an incredible film.
Imagine you smashing a Paddington film.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
I would love to do that.
Definitely.
Out of the way, Dougal Wilson.
Yeah, move out the way. Or do you know what? Wonka, hated.
You could do that.
But I could have done it better.
Yeah.
God. Jesus Christ. But like, awful. Like, sorry, but I didn't like it at all. But like, if I was going to do something, that's the kind of thing I would take.
Is it?
Gladly.
Have you ever written any musical pieces?
Oh my God, no, but I'd love to do that so much. Yeah.
See, we're just manifesting here. I mean, that's all I'm kind of trying
out. I'd love
that.
Yeah, I've no doubt that'll come, Rosie.
Do you know what, actually, I'm feeling like the best thing I've seen in like the last 10 years, Matilda. The new one?
Mm, I haven't watched it.
Oh my God, so good.
I felt bad to watch it because how great the first one is.
No. It's like we're on a completely different train.
Okay.
Like, original Matilda, like, incredible. New Matilda, directed by the same person that directed the theatre show. Incredible. Oh. Like, Emma Thompson's best performance I've ever seen as Trunchbull. Like, amazing.
Yeah. I was scared of the first Matilda, though, man. Shut me up.
Yeah, I'd take Matilda. I'm just listing children's films. What was the question?
Inspirations, but you're smashing it.
Yeah. But yeah, no, new Matilda is
honestly. What are your
amazing
inspirations, Ozzy?
Billy Elliot, I've just told you.
Billy Elliot. Yeah,
apart from Billy Elliot.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, love that one.
Yeah, that's great. Again, you can have that sad, funny
sad,
element.
Happy.
Yeah.
Oh, so very sad, but.
Yeah. But I like you know.
Stand
like,
by, you're a bit of Stand
like
By Me, aren't you?
Stand By Me, yeah. Okay. Again.
Goonies
is great. But then I love This Is England because it leads you into a false sense of security.
Okay, yeah.
With a kid, because he's innocent and fun and having a great time, and then it just shifts.
Yeah,
that is. There's a big shift in
big
that.
Big shift. Though. But it's funny. It's got some wicked lines.
Trying to get Shane on here, aren't we, mate?
Trying.
Are you?
Yeah, trying.
Good. Come luck. On, Shane. Hey, sit down.
Too busy in his
now then.
Off.
Busy at the minute.
Yeah, busy boy. I get we touched on awards. What's your opinion on awards?
Oh, interesting.
Because obviously you won a pretty big one, I would say, the Ad Age one.
Yeah, that was a nice one.
Yeah, not bad to have.
Looks nice on my shelf.
Looks wicked, yeah.
Yeah.
I bet.
Is it?
You're saying that like you've been to my house.
I know, yeah.
Looks wicked.
Oh, no!
Yes, sorry, that was a nice one.
So that was for director to watch?
Yes.
Yeah.
Watch me.
All agencies, keep your eyes out.
What, keep your eyes out?
Yeah.
Oh, what was the question? What do I think about awards?
Your opinion on them, yeah.
Well, I'll take them because creatives are interested in them. So
yeah, are they? Yeah, so that's a good point. We had two creatives on who can echo that. They're yeah, you know, yeah, definitely. But I think also what's interesting about awards, and obviously you get people who make work who are not really interested in it. But from my point of view, I think what they do, which is quite nice, if it does well at awards, it gives your film, commercial, whatever, gives it a longer life.
Yes, so true.
So, you know, you can kind of like make a good piece of work and it don't get lost in 4 weeks. You can actually talk about it for about a year. Yeah, bore people's brains out.
Even though you haven't done anything else. Hey!
Don't forget about me.
Don't forget about my toilet roll advert.
Yeah. Some good ones coming out recently.
But from a creative point of view, back in the day, would you look on the website and would you want to see the laurels on the... Do you know what I mean? Would that make a difference?
Maybe, yeah, I guess, yeah.
As in, like, they've got loads of awards, they'll probably get me one.
True, that is true. Yeah, I guess I would think of it like that.
I guess what you want these awards to do is connect you with people.
Yeah.
That's the point. It's about making connections. Otherwise, what are you paying for?
Yeah,
like, you've got to be
laurels.
Going... Yeah, exactly, and smash it up. They count, don't they, on the website?
They do.
But it's like you want to be going to an awards ceremony where you are able to meet people.
Yeah, it's true. I don't like meeting people though, really.
What?
Not a huge fan.
Really?
No, just like
not very personal.
Stay in my bubble.
Did you feel though that the awards helped? That award, the Ad Age award, helped you? Do you feel like you felt scripts come in a bit more?
Yeah,
or
I have had a few, to be fair.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last month I've had a lot.
Because that's what it's about.
Yeah.
To stimulate more work.
Yeah.
And if that's working, then that's the point.
Yeah, yeah, no. Yeah, there was a little surge, so yeah. I guess, yes.
Yeah, you know, I think it's part and parcel of it. I think you've got to respect it. You can't turn your head to it. You've got to get involved. I think what we have a chat about is just how expensive it is. You know,
it's crazy.
And it's a tough one. But
I think if you don't have the backing of a production company,
you
can't even put your foot in.
That's it. It's tough, isn't it? So I applaud anyone, any directors, freelance directors who are submitting the work. I think fair play to you.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Fair play. But I'll send you a picture of mine.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Question.
Yes.
What is your win to loss ratio of treatments?
Oh, interesting.
Recently.
These are great questions, Ozzy.
Oh, I don't know. I'd say like win one, lose three.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Not bad.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, let's have your honest answer.
Win one, lose 80.
No, I thought it'd be more like,
I never lose.
Win three, I never lose none.
I mean, what? Do you know what though? I think I've been in like quite a privileged position where I just pitch on the things that I really like, and then I think on the calls you can't always tell, but sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, I'm definitely gonna get this one, and then all of a sudden there's like you don't, and then you're like, what? Even to the point where I did one that we were like convinced we were gonna get. I did like, I don't know, like, oh, I was on holiday and we did like 8 rounds of changes or something. And I was away. Classy. I was like traveling around France and I was doing all these calls with the clients and I was like, well, we got this one, like, surely. And then we just lost it last minute because the clients picked someone else. They preferred their reel. So you're just like, you never actually know. I hate the,
you know what?
The dangly carrot there.
Something like that happened to me recently. They were like, single, we've got a single bid for you. Can we ever call the creatives? I'm like, yeah, I've called the creatives. Really got along with them. Told me the idea, and then I put, they didn't want a treatment, they just wanted a chat.
They're the dark ones.
So then after the chat, they were like, oh, do you think you could do...
Oh, the classic.
Two-page treatment.
Can you just do a couple of pages?
Yeah, so I like... Oh, yeah, actually, you know, I'd actually like to do a treatment because I want to just get out what we've just chatted about. Did a two-page treatment. I did a 25-page treatement is what I did.
Nice, of course.
Because there's no such thing as a two-page treatment.
That's just the hello.
And then they were like, oh, we really like your treatment. We're going to get someone else to pitch on it as well, if that's okay. Oh. Would you mind? And I'm like, no, they were going to three-way bid it. No, two-way bid it. Then they were like, oh, we're just going to get a three-way bid. And how would you feel about that? And I was like, you know what? Why don't you just count me out of it? Because it's obvious that my idea is not connecting. And just if you go elsewhere. Like, you know, and there's no point me staying in this. Like, if you're in three-way, it's because obviously there's something a bit different.
Yeah.
Oh, just tell me what you want. And I'll give you it.
Yeah.
Because that's the difficulty. Sometimes it's a case of like them trying to...
They're trying to like give you freedom, but then at the same time, they know already what they want.
You know, when you're at like, a point where you're like, just tell me what you want.
Just tell me what you want.
And I'll give you it.
I'll give you it.
Please.
I'll give you it.
Do you think it's important to be picky?
With what you treat on?
With scripts, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I am, but only, I don't know. I think otherwise, it's kind of like you said. This is like you can only be picky if you can afford to be picky, right? Yeah. Sometimes you can't. There's times where you're like, well, I need to do that, and then maybe that just doesn't go on the reel, whatever. But in terms of like what you take. Yeah, God. Because otherwise, it's like you said earlier, you've got a reel and it's like, what does this person do? I'm not so sure. And I think when you're a creative, like there was a time when I was a creative and I wanted like a woman who did comedy because we were doing like a dry vagina ad. And I was like, this is very important that we have a woman to do this, probably. And I got like a lot of reels and a lot of them, no shade on women. Women are great, but they just hadn't been given the opportunities. So like a lot of the reels that I got, they were kind of a bit all over the place. And there was like a bit of comedy, but then there was, you know, some idents, and then there was something unbranded, and then there was something that looked completely different to the rest of it. And it was all, this isn't just women, obviously, this is anybody. But it was a bit sporadic. And I think if you don't really know what you're looking for, and you just take anything, then yeah, it can become a bit messy. Or like tonally, it can become a bit messy. It's a bit of a fine line.
It's tough, isn't it? Because even if you on the creative side saw something in someone, maybe there's not exactly that, but it's even trying to sell that then to the client and go like, this is the right person. That's even tough in itself. If it's not black and white.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's interesting hearing you say that, actually, because I think, like you said, I think you're right. I think it's important to be picky if you can be picky.
Yeah. You can't always be.
Yeah, for sure. But also, I think it's important to curate your website, just like we always talk about this, just as if it's a micro business, just as if it's like, you know, it makes things easier for the creatives to go, all right, sweet, yeah, this is that guy, or whatever. So
it's like a brand. Like, even when we were creative, we got taught, like, you have to have a brand. Yeah. Like, you are a brand. And if someone can go, yeah, that's Rosie, this is what she does, then I think that's quite good.
Yeah.
And that's not to say this is what she'll always do.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's, I mean, that we could open can of worms about that as well, about what you want to do. But I guess, it's one of them, and it's always tricky. But yeah, you got any more little questions down there?
I've been smashing mine, mate.
You have done really well.
I don't know about you.
You just put your laptop away.
You've done really well.
No, I've smashed them all.
Meeting adjourned.
Licking his lips, getting ready for that pint, aren't you, was he?
Any more, Craig?
Any more?
I think that's a really nice way to wrap it up. I think it's been an absolute pleasure bringing you on.
Thank you.
Yeah, really, really good. Really great to meet you, because I've been wanting to meet you for ages.
Good to meet you too.
Yeah, we have a little cheeky pint now, won't we?
Sure.
I feel like we've got. I feel like there might be loads of people out there, Ozzy, by the way, because you know when you just find it hard to meet people. I always stick it on end of a Now Then podcast, and I'm always like, I'm in Soho on Thursday night. Come down for a pint.
All Craig's fans are out.
Yeah, bloody hell. All the people waiting for you.
Probably,
it's like stage door. Here he is. Yep. The man of the hour.
There'll be no one out there.
There won't.
Wait, I'm so confused. So, what did you put, like, a thing on social media to say, I'm in Soho?
No.
It's confusing.
When people do that, this is wild to me. Yeah. Like, you're just putting, like, I'm in Soho, like, hello, my fans. Like, that's mental.
No, I don't do that. I just mean, you know, when people go, hey, mate, how you doing? Do you want to catch up for a beer?
I did a polar opposite. Like, I'll lie about where I am so I don't have to see anybody.
Yeah, well, I do that usually. But when I am in Soho, like, now I go, you know what? If you're about for a pint after, I'll have a pint with you.
I'm still confused. I don't understand. So you're putting it on the end of this podcast? No. But this podcast isn't obviously coming out for, like, 3 weeks.
This is actually live.
3 weeks. Live. 3 weeks, you'll be lucky.
Three years.
We did a podcast 6 months
ago. I'll be in Soho. Come and meet me.
3 weeks.
Fucking hell.
I reckon 2027. Anyone want a pint in Soho? No. I've lost it. You've lost me.
Me too.
And on that note.
Oh, dear me.
See ya.
See ya.
Bye.